Welcome to episode 336 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the digitalmediazone.com. I'm your host, Richard Gunther.
And I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Oh, psych! You're back!
I am back. And, ugh, man, it feels like so long since I've done this and so long since I've worked. And I mean, I've never taken a 3-week break from pretty much anything. So it's been quite an adjustment since getting back to this country and then back to everything else in my normal daily life since my big trip.
Well, a lot has been going on while you've left and been gone and come back. A lot has been going on.
Yeah, and it was hard to keep up with because my main source of getting information is Twitter. And you can't access Twitter in China unless you've got a VPN. And you know, I had a VPN, but I had to share it with Jen, and only one person could be connected at a time. And, you know, you let the wife access her Facebooks when you're on a trip like that before you access Twitter.
So, oh, man. Yeah. Well, you know what I learned while you were away?
What?
I learned that I can't produce two shows.
You can. You would just need to not edit so much on yours and maybe
not have a job. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, but I did finally get a chance to listen to that last episode that you and Marcus put together. It was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
We had a lot of fun doing it.
Good. All right, so why don't we kick this episode off? We're not really gonna do listener feedback this week. Instead,
it's not that we don't have any.
No, we've got a bunch, but it's all, every single piece of it relates to our first topic this week. So if you want to send us an email message for next week, you can do that by emailing us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. But for everybody else, like Jose and Renee and everybody else, we're going to get to your emails, well, now. So last week, Richard, you covered that Microsoft was changing the way they were doing guide data for Windows Media Center. This is actually based off of a post I wrote. And, you know, it was funny to listen to the podcast, you know, a week after you released it. And as all of these emails are coming in, because when you discuss this on the podcast, you're like, guys, this is great news for Windows Media Center users. This is going to be a great thing. And then everything just went downhill.
Well, yeah. Well, let's be clear about this, right? This worked for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
It also didn't work for a lot of people. And, let's say it's a vast minority of people that the update didn't work for. Let's take the numbers that we last knew as Windows Media Center users, which was roughly 6 million, and let's cut that in half, assuming that they've had loss over the last couple of years. So let's say 3 million people use Windows Media Center. If even like 10% of the people had problems, that means thousands and thousands of people had problems.
Right. And they have been the vocal minority, as the minority with issues usually is. So,
but in all fairness, as they should be.
Oh, absolutely.
Because this has been a mess for a lot of people.
And all of their feedback is getting heard by Microsoft, and Microsoft is actually working on this. So that's it's good that they're doing that, and it's good that Microsoft is actually acting on all of this. So they made this guide data switch. What are the problems that people are seeing?
Yeah, so the first and biggest problem is that a lot of people aren't even getting the update. This was supposed to happen automatically. You were supposed to see a cutover from Zap to it to the Rovi data invisibly, behind the scenes. No action required by you. Therefore, no communication required by Microsoft, right? Well, what happens when your guide data runs out, which is what's been happening for a lot of people?
Yeah, for a lot of people, I think it stopped working on like the 22nd or the 21st, I believe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, our post on this went up on the 8th. So, I mean, we knew about it and we published it, but obviously not everyone in the, I mean, most of the people on the planet read our blog, but not everybody.
Not everybody.
A couple of people missed this and didn't know what was going on. So yeah, I mean, that's worst case scenario, right? That it just stopped working at all. Maybe that's worst case, but that I think was a pretty easy fix, right? You just kind of, well, actually, I guess I don't know. What did the people in that situation have to do?
For the most part, you could fix it by rerunning the guide data setup. So you go through the process of identifying where your provider is and which provider you have, and it'll go through and it'll find the appropriate data. Except that in many markets, it couldn't find a match for many zip codes at all, particularly in some Texas locales. For some reason, the Houston, Texas area seemed to be one area that had a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, we knew going into this that there would be some that seemed less common. You know, maybe I think I saw in the release notes that the Armed Forces Network wasn't going to have guide data, which is really unfortunate, but doesn't affect as many people. But for a market like Houston, Texas, a rather large market, to not have any data at all is pretty odd.
Now, for this, it seems that the problems are largely associated with over-the-air data. So if you have cable, it seems like you're getting your channel lineup more accurately than if you're in an over-the-air situation. And then it's kind of a crapshoot as to which local affiliates you may actually use. And the next problem is that if you find an area that has a match, you may find that it just plain old doesn't have some of the stations that you should get.
Yeah, and that's there's not really a fix for that right now. At least there's not a fix that you can really do on your own right now, right? Other than, I mean, maybe you could go, can you add the channels but not have listings?
Yeah, see, that's, I mean, technically you could go, you could use like the, what is it, the guide data tool or whatever it is. There's some ways that you can hack your way into getting the channel. Maybe your card or rather your antenna provider, like if you use something like an HD Home Run over the air tuner, maybe it has the ability to add channels. It's really messy, and it works differently for almost everybody, depending on what your situation is. It is fixable for some people. For others, it's not. And part of it, I mean, a lot of it is the data. A lot of it is that there's a problem with the Rovi data, and Microsoft is working with Rovi to fix that. But that's not the end of the problems.
Nope.
Because we then have issues with the data itself, maybe having the right lineups, but the data just not being as good. So It may not have the right new or repeat flags, and so people are missing recordings. It may have bad or incorrect images, like just completely unrelated images for different shows. It may have less, or in some cases, no description data.
Yeah. So we had Jose point out to us that, like, the listings for the late night shows with the late night, like the late night talk shows, the Zap2It data used to like list who the guests were. And now the Rovi data doesn't list who the guests are, which is just less useful, obviously. I was impacted by this, not in so much as like my series recordings were screwed up, just that the metadata itself changed so much that some of my recordings don't fall into my previously set up scheduled recordings. So, Richard, you and most of our listeners know I watch a lot of racing on TV. So I have a few different series set up as series recordings, and they're named by the series. So like Formula One Racing, Tudor United Sports Car Series. And there was a United Sports Car Series race this Sunday. I knew it was this weekend. I checked my scheduled recordings. It wasn't in there. I eventually found out when the race was supposed to be on, and the guide data for it was now just listed. The title of the program was Auto Racing, and Auto Racing is the title of tons of primarily lesser watched racing series around the world. And I can't possibly set up a series recording on the title Auto Racing because it would record tons of shows that I don't care about. Like, I don't care about, you know, crazy, weird off-road dirt racing or weird British series. I don't care about these things. So this metadata has affected me pretty directly in that way.
Yeah, kind of messy. That we honestly don't know when or how it's going to get fixed because we know that the data that Rovi provides is different. And we were actually advised in advance that people would see differences. I don't honestly know when or if something like that is going to get corrected. And maybe corrected is the wrong word. It's just different.
It is just different, but in some ways it's so different that it's detrimental, like this auto racing problem that I'm having.
Right, right. All right, so there's good news, right? Microsoft has acknowledged the issues and let people know in a very public forum how they were addressing this and that it was going to be something that they would be working on. And where did that happen, Josh? Was that on the community forums or somewhere on the Microsoft site?
Well, it would have to be, right? Nope. Instead, it was over at thegreenbutton.tv.
Okay, let's just pause for a moment. Can we, please? Let's remind everybody that thegreenbutton.tv was a community response to Microsoft after Microsoft bought the Green Button and took over it, basically did nothing to it, and eventually killed it. Now the Green Button TV is the place to go for people in the community to talk with each other about what's going on. Microsoft doesn't really have a place to talk to the community about what's going on, so they post on this community site.
At least they're going to where the community is.
Which isn't Microsoft.com.
Nope. So, like you said, it's still good news. They're acknowledging the issues, and more than just acknowledging the issues, they've already fixed some of them, and they're working with Rovi to try to address some of the other ones. Like you mentioned, the people who weren't getting over the air lineups, most of that's been fixed by now. Some of the series stuff is being worked on, and then apparently there's some cable card lineup issues that I didn't realize either, but so that's being worked on for some people. It didn't affect my cable card lineups. I imagine it didn't affect yours either.
Now, there is something that I do want to let people know about. I got hit with one of the problems, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but some, not all, of my recordings simply are not getting recorded anymore. So Big Brother, good example. It's a network show. There were no shows in my list of things that were going to get recorded. But if I deleted and recreated the series, then all the upcoming shows are there and they're getting recorded. This was something that we actually knew might be a problem. It was one of the things that Microsoft had on the knowledge base post about the update. But it's funny that I didn't see it right away. It's as if I only saw it after the original data ran out or something like that.
Well, that's
weird.
I guess that kind of makes sense if it's based on those old IDs instead of the new IDs, but
yeah,
unfortunate. But at least, again, it's something you can fix on your own. It's just something you may not notice in time and you may miss some recordings due to it. You know, I didn't really consider this and should probably go and double check that all of my series are working.
I'm half tempted to just undo and redo all of my series subscriptions.
Ugh. Well, and you can't, like, because you can only set up a series recording for something that's on right now.
Oh, geez, that's right. Okay.
So you're going to have to wait until like mid-September to do a bunch of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So write them all down and then Write yourself a calendar reminder. Mid-September, do this again.
Keep or an maybe eye on like, that premieres list.
Yeah, in exactly.
The My Media Center app.
All right. So I think we've pretty much beat this guy data issue to death. You know, we'll of course keep an eye on it, and hopefully we'll see more resolutions to the issues that are still outstanding. But thank you to everybody who emailed us or left a comment on the website, and more importantly, thank you to everybody who actually let Microsoft know via either the green button or through the Microsoft Connect site, because all of your feedback to them has had positive impact on the situation. So good job. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now our next video story is more bad news. Unfortunately, this one affects me directly. It turns out that the Fox network has requested, or so they say, that Verizon set the copy once flag on all Fox channels on Verizon Fios.
Does that include the Fox network?
That includes Fox itself, FX, Fox Sports, everything.
Huh.
Everything Fox. Crazy.
That is crazy.
Crazy. So we don't know why, because there are other carriers that still have it clearly available, like Comcast. So why Fios? Why did they have Fios do it? Now, Dave Zatz reported this over on Zatz Not Funny, and I could swear that originally the headline on this post suggested that Verizon Fios was blocking this, and then later he changed it to say that Fox is, that Fox has asked Verizon to block it. I don't know if that's true or not. That's what's in my head anyway. But further research after the initial wave of frustration and anger, it revealed that in fact it was Fox that requested this. At least that's what Verizon is telling its customers. Really frustrating. And we have no reason to believe that this is going to change. If this is a specific request, I mean, this could be the start of a very slippery slope with other networks, other providers, and who knows, maybe eventually we're all going to be in a Time Warner Cable-like situation where we can't do anything with our content because it's all protected.
Now, maybe I have this wrong, but I thought that they weren't allowed to put copy once flags on the network channels, like the channels that are equivalent to what you get over the air.
I don't know the answer to that. I would be willing to bet that the standard definition equivalents of these channels aren't blocked.
Ugh, who cares? It is 2015 after all.
Right. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, that's garbage. Hopefully that changes, but yeah, I think I'm with you in thinking that the likelihood of that changing for you anytime soon is probably pretty slim.
Yeah, I think so too. All right. Well, let's move on to audio topics. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about Windows 10, which came out this week. Spoilers. But
yeah, for all of you who didn't know.
But fellow MVP Barb Bowman over on her blog has, I think, a really good comprehensive look at how entertainment capabilities have changed in Windows 10. And very specifically, she looks a lot at the audio capabilities. And it's not a good story.
No. Well, it's not a good story if you really care about and use DLNA. Because basically, DLNA is all but gone from the new modern apps. Now, you can still use DLNA to play to from like Windows Media Player and from Windows Explorer, which is fine if you're on like a laptop or a regular desktop, I guess, or you've got a mouse. But none of that is all that touch friendly, and it's really not a great user experience. Whereas in Windows 8.1, the built-in apps for music and videos and photos all allowed you to use the charms to really easily stream your content, you know, your music, your photos, and your videos to DLNA players right from the charms. It was super simple. And like none of these apps have that now except for TV and videos. It's this functionality is completely gone from the Groove Music app and from the new Photos app. You just can't do it now.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's like they're only the way that I guess they're recommending, or at least the only other available way of doing it, is by using Miracast. And Miracast is fine for what it is, but Miracast is really a screen. It's basically a wireless monitor type display. I'm going to also display my laptop or tablet's display up on this TV. If I just want to, you know, one example that Barb uses is sending music via DLNA to a Western Digital box that's connected right to a receiver or to a Sonos speaker. No reason to have a TV involved in any of that, which is what Miracast would require. And requiring Miracast and a TV just makes that whole experience a lot more complicated. So right now, the DLNA experience in Windows 10 is nowhere near as good as what it was in Windows 8.1. And I guess if you want to try and look on the bright side, these apps are getting updated a lot. So maybe they'll be adding this functionality later on down the road, thinking that it probably, well, Microsoft always has usage stats. And I'm sure the DLNA streaming from these apps wasn't super common. So maybe it's just further down on the priority list for features to add later.
I'm sure that didn't have anything to do with the fact that it was largely buried.
Well, you mean buried in the charms bar?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the functions that were in the charms bar moved out of the charms bar because of the fact that people couldn't find them. People forgot that they were there or they couldn't find them at all. And even to this day, I get confused by the share versus devices options there. For whatever reasons, devices just doesn't seem like the right place to go to be streaming stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. All right, so the great write-up from Barb there. We also, maybe the first piece of good news we have this week, Groove Music is now supported by Sonos speakers in beta. But there's some caveats to that. You got to play with this today, right, Richard?
I did. And yeah, this has some bad news associated with it too. And that is that essentially, while this will make your collection and their curated music collections and your ability to search and everything available in Sonos, just like any other service, you actually have to have a Groove Music Pass to use it, even just to play stuff in your collection, which to me just makes no sense. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, I don't get that at all either. Did they say that was a short-term restriction, that was just part of it being in beta, or did they give you the impression that this is the way it's always going to be?
I got no impression either way. I couldn't find anything about this specific limitation. So I think at this point, I'm going to assume that this is part of the beta-ness of this application, and hopefully they'll figure out a way that they can remove that restriction. Because, you know, I have the ability, for example, to access Google Play music that I have in my Google Play library, even though I don't have the Google Play Music Pass to be able to access everything else. So I should be able to do the same thing with my Groove music.
Yeah, and that was really going to be my next question, is how does this compare to other services that have free and paid offerings? Like, if you're not a paid Spotify premium subscriber, can you still use Spotify through Sonos?
That's a question I can't answer because I don't know.
Because you're a paid premium.
Because I'm a Spotify paid premium subscriber. Yeah. however, I do use it for audio, and I can get to audio content, and there's a paid tier for audio.
Well, then hopefully this is just part of the beta-ness of the whole thing. Hopefully that'll change.
I hope so too. I also noted in my post about this that I think it's notable that Microsoft and Sonos were really on the ball on getting this out. And meanwhile, people who are using Apple Music, I don't have a whole lot of good things to say about Apple Music, but people using Apple Music have nothing on Sonos right now. They have no way of listening to their Apple Music libraries, only the stuff that they have in their iTunes library if they have that connected manually. So good on Microsoft.
Yeah, definitely. Especially to get it out today, the day that Windows 10 is launching. So
I'm sure that was not an accident.
No, I wouldn't imagine it was. All right, just a little bit of gaming news to cover this week. And that is that we're almost to a new month, and that means new free games. So Xbox Live Games with Gold, if you're a Gold subscriber on Xbox One, for all of August, you can get Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. A fun little game. Not sure that I would pay $20 for it. So, hey, you can get it for free for the whole month. And then it would normally be the second half of the month, but they just keep screwing with this on the Xbox One side. August 16th through September 15th, you'll be able to grab a game called How to Survive Storm Warning. And Richard, you don't know anything. I mean, you're not a gamer at all. With a game title like that, what would you think this game is about?
Well, particularly since it's coming out during hurricane season, I'm thinking that it's an educational game that teaches you how to prepare for bad weather.
You would be completely wrong.
Oh, okay.
It is actually a third-person action-based game that where you are like stranded on an island with zombies.
Okay. You know, I'm only partially kidding with my response there. I mean, that's what I would have guessed, that it had something to do with weather.
Yeah, I would think that too. Like some sort of like terrible weather simulation kind of game maybe, but nope, it's pretty much just another zombie game. So, hey, at least it's free for a month. And then on the Xbox 360 side, a couple of really good games, Metro 2033 for the first half of the month and Metro Last Light for the second half of the month. And again, if those are games that you might be interested in, get them because they might end up working with backwards compatibility on the Xbox One eventually. So,
oh, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, not for you. These aren't games for you.
Yeah, but now that I'm in this mode, I just go online and I order them off for free since I can.
Right. And you'll still someday, never play them.
Yeah, someday.
No, you're not going to play Metro. It's not happening.
Okay.
It's not a subway simulator either. This is a first-person shooter.
I'm getting it anyway.
I told you, not for you. Not for you. All right. And another game that may or may not be for you, Richard. I just lean towards not, since you're not a gamer. But Minecraft is now available for Windows 10. This is the special like Minecraft Touch version for Windows 10 is now available. If you already own Minecraft, you can get this for free. If you don't own it, it's $20. But there's also a free trial of the game, and the free trial allows you to play as much, well, it allows you to do whatever you want, but you only get 90 minutes in which to you know, build and hack and destroy and whatever it is that you do in Minecraft. So I downloaded it to check it out. It seems cool. It's pretty playable on a tablet device if you're into Minecraft. So sure, why not? I'll probably never play it again because I'm not a Minecraft guy, but it seems like a pretty good version of Minecraft if you are.
I think it's very cool that it's available right away. I think it's great that they updated it for this platform. I'm very excited to see this. And I mentioned this in the last episode. I love what they're doing with this as their lead into gaming with HoloLens. So it's obvious that Microsoft is committed to Minecraft, and that's a good thing.
Well, they paid enough money for it. They ought to be. All right, so that does it for our gaming news. But, you know, like we've said about 100 times already on the show, Windows 10, it's here. It's finally here. It seems like we've been using it forever at this point, but the final version now here. And, you know, the weird thing, and this is what I kind of missed out on while I was in China, is the final version was released to insiders over the last week. I'm not exactly sure when, but sometime in the last couple of weeks, you could have gotten the final version. Not if you, you know, restored your Surface back to 8.1 before going on a big trip to another country. And then you come back and the insider program is closed and you just have to wait until the rest of the world can get Windows 10. But, you know, if you were a normal insider, you probably already had this final version for the last week or two. I don't even know when they actually released it to everybody.
I think it was trickling in over the last week, actually. So did I tell you, or did you happen to notice my comment on Twitter today that neither of my tablet devices has ever had the upgrade to Windows icon appear on it?
Really?
Really. And I bought the Stream 8 with the intent of testing Windows 10 on it. Couldn't because of that compressed OS deal. And now neither that nor my old ThinkPad, which at this point I'm willing to just switch to Windows 10 because my ThinkPad is essentially a doorstop. Like I can charge it and after a day of not using it, it's completely drained of its battery. It's the most piss poor battery I've ever seen in a device. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
But it would be enough that I could play with Windows 10 on it and see what the tablet experience is like. So I have not had a chance to play with this at all.
Well, that's unfortunate. I've gotten to play with it a little. So like I had said, I had restored back to Windows 8.1. And so I missed out on the insider stuff. And then I was screwing around with it in other weird ways. And then yesterday, finally fully restored it, you know, back total factory reset. And then upgraded all the way through to 8.1 and never got the little flag. And today I still didn't have the little flag to update. And a friend of mine told me, hey, run this Windows update command from the command prompt and Windows update will download and install Windows 10 for you. So I did this and it downloaded Windows 10, you know, all like 2.7 gigs of it, and then went to install it and there was an error. And apparently he eventually found an article on Reddit that said how to fix it. So you could probably force your devices to do this. I went a slightly different route to get it on my Surface. And what I did, because I have an MSDN subscription, I went to MSDN, downloaded the Windows 10 ISO, and did an upgrade on my Surface using the ISO. It worked perfectly. And now I've got a full activated, completely ready to go installation of Windows 10 on my Surface Pro. And it worked like a champ. I had no issues at all doing it that way. And it still took 45 minutes total, probably not even that. Maybe more like a half hour. It was fairly quick. But it was basically a completely stock install of 8.1 on my Surface Pro since I hadn't really done anything since paving it, you know, the day before. So in terms of what's changed and whether or not I like it, because I've obviously complained a lot in the past about Windows 10 on tablet devices, and it's come a long way. It's still not perfect. It's still not exactly what I would prefer, but it's definitely better. So on a tablet in tablet mode, the start screen is considerably better. So it still scrolls vertically, which I'm not used to yet. I think it's weird, but I'm sure I'll eventually get used to it. But the things that I hated the most in recent releases was that getting to all apps required you to like reach for a hamburger menu at the top left and then move your hand to the bottom left to go to all apps and all that. And they've streamlined some of that. The hamburger menu is still there. And it displays the full, like, small column of stuff start menu that you're used to seeing on Windows 10, where it gives you the most used apps at the top and a quick access sort of thing for File Explorer, settings, power, and all apps at the bottom.
But wait, I have to interrupt you and ask a question.
Sure.
You're not saying that they replaced the start menu button with a hamburger menu button, did they?
No, but if you're in tablet mode...
Because I was about to lose my mind, I think.
No. There is a hamburger menu button, but it's...
But it's on the start menu.
It's on the start screen.
Okay.
So if you're doing tablet mode where it's a full screen start screen, you get a hamburger menu at the top left. There's still the start button at the bottom left. But then above that, and it's always visible, there's a little menu-looking button that's actually a link to all apps, which is really good. And right above that is a power icon giving you quick access to sleep, shutdown, and restart. So if you just want to get to all apps from the start screen, it's only one tap now, and it's in the bottom left. And I can easily scroll it there. I can tap on one of the letters for the headings. So like, you know, M has Mail and Maps and Microsoft Edge. And so I can tap on that and it gives me just a list of letters, and I can quickly, you know, select W to get down to weather and things like that. It's much better. Still not perfect. But the start screen is a whole lot better. The Action Center hasn't really changed much other than maybe prettier icons. And is fine. Although I still find myself trying to swipe in and getting the Action Center and expecting there to be a start button like there was on the Charms, but I'll hopefully eventually get used to that. What hasn't changed and what I still really dislike is task switching, swiping in from the left and getting essentially the full screen alt tab experience. I still just don't think is a good experience on a tablet. I can't easily get to some of those open windows, especially if there's a lot of them. There could be a lot of small ones in the middle of the screen that I can't reach with my thumbs on my giant tablet. So that's probably my biggest complaint at this point, now that the start menu is pretty usable. The back button that they've put next to the start button when you're in tablet mode works pretty well, as you would expect for navigating around the different apps. I mean, at this point, I think the only real weirdness that people are going to have to deal with is if you're using modern apps that were created for 8.1 in Windows 10 that haven't been updated, some of them might still feel a little weird. And, you know, they're expecting app bars and charms and things like that you have to get to through hamburger menus and stuff. And eventually those apps will hopefully get updated to use the new Windows 10 ways of doing things. But it still doesn't seem like there's a lot of guidance around how people should be doing things. And most of the guidance that they do have is, oh, well, put it in a hamburger menu, which, you know, you and I, not exactly huge fans of.
Yeah, not a fan at all. But I'm glad to hear it's not as bad as it was. I mean, I was worried about them, as you put it in your post months ago, ruining the tablet experience. I want to test this out myself, but like I was willing to make predictions about Windows 8, calling it perhaps the worst version of Windows since Windows ME, and if we were to look at this now, after the fact, I think I might have won that one. Anyway, I think Windows 10 is going to lose them any chance at the tablet market, period.
But why? Because it's not as bad as what it once was.
Because Windows 8 and 8.1 in particular, was a very good tablet operating system. It was terrible on the desktop, but it was a very good tablet operating system. And I think once again, they have succumbed to the one operating system for both platforms solution that they insist on propagating generation after generation. And this is one too many times. This is going to be it for them.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm not even sure that I'm feeling confident enough to make a prediction one way or the other right now.
All right. Well, one thing that we do know is that if you are a Windows 10 home user and you're taking the free update, that you're going to be required to take free updates all the time. Whenever they come out with new updates, you're going to have to take them. So whether this is going to be a Patch Tuesday kind of situation or something more frequent, or perhaps I should say less scheduled than that, when there's an update that is required, it's just going to get installed. And that's had lots of people up in arms. I personally don't like that as a power user. And I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you know, the press is blowing this up and making a big deal out of it. And then I saw this story that I think is the perfect example of why this shouldn't happen. And it's a post about how certain drivers that were getting updated for NVIDIA graphics cards are actually killing some computers. And so we know that it's possible to get a driver that causes all kinds of problems, and you want to be able to roll them back. And so I think it calls into mind the question, and I know that this has been debated a lot, so I'm not suggesting that we should put this on the table and talk about it ad nauseum, but I think it's a word of caution to watch, that sometimes this is not the best idea. And I really, really, really hope that Microsoft is judicious in what things they require you to take, and that it isn't stuff like drivers that could be so wildly different on different types of devices, and more instead inclined to be things like feature updates and app updates and stuff like that.
You know, I wouldn't say that I think this is overblown so much, because I do think that this could be an issue. On the driver side, it seems like drivers tend to fall in the optional updates category most of the time. So while driver updates definitely have the biggest potential negative impact to harming the system, if they're optional updates, I can't imagine they would be forced. I don't know for sure. But even excluding the possibility of optional updates wreaking havoc on your system, there are just regular Windows updates that have messed things up a lot. And it seems like the last couple of years, the frequency of bad updates being released has increased. So, you know, if the stability of Windows updates had been getting better and better over the last 3 years, then maybe people wouldn't be quite as freaked out about this, but it hasn't. It seems like Microsoft's QA hasn't been doing as good of a job. Now, the one other counterpoint that I would put to that is, one of the goals with Windows 10 is to get it on everything out there. And if it is on everything out there, then theoretically, their testing ought to be a little bit better. But that's kind of a tough counterpoint to even make, really. So it's mostly good, because I think there's probably more people out there who are turning off automatic updates when they shouldn't be, than people who are going to be negatively impacted by an auto update that is going to screw things up. So I think this is going to help more people than it's going to hurt. But the first time it screws up a lot of people, it's going to be really, really bad press for Microsoft.
Yeah. So we'll just have to see how this works. And certainly it's something that they could reverse direction on. It's not like they haven't done that a couple times in the last couple of years.
Boy, that's for sure. All right. Well, Richard, I have a feeling you've been watching a lot of stuff in your entertainment center as of late. So
is that the half page of notes that I have for what's going on in my entertainment center? Is that what clued you in there, Josh?
Clearly, you're not having any issues with your series recordings on your media center, because you're watching everything.
Well, as I said, I am, but that's a different issue. So, like I said, I had to go in and reset some of my series recordings. I have not completed that, but I want to remind people again that they may want to check, as different seasons start to go in and make sure that stuff is in the list of stuff to get recorded. It is worth noting that My Media Center is the only PC that actually did get the, hey, want to upgrade to Windows 10? Nag. So, or as they were calling it in the latest Windows Weekly episode, the Windows 10 bug. So, yeah, that I want to remind people, don't do that. Now, the good news is that if you try to upgrade, there's a nice warning message that a user in the Windows Media Center Google Plus community posted that says, hey, you know, you're using Media Center and this is going to get rid of that. You sure you want to do that? So it's nice that they're checking at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a couple things that I've been doing. First off, I purchased some new Microsoft hardware. Look at this pretty thing. I bought the new folding Microsoft keyboard that we spoke about in the last episode and that I've been lusting over since the announcement came out. I have not had a chance to use this much, but I paired it with my iPad, of course. And other than it being a little cramped, I really like it. I like the feel of it, but the keys are very cramped. It seems almost unnecessarily so. It seems like they used a lot of space for the enter and delete and tab and shift and stuff, and they could have economized a little bit better to perhaps provide some more space for just the main keys that you use. But otherwise, I really like it. And what I think is fantastic about this is this nice little folding vinyl thing that automatically turns off when it snaps closed with its magnet and then turns on again when you unfold it. And in this nice little, barely larger than a passport sized billfold that it folds up into, this is something that's so easy to throw into a bag and you don't have to worry about something accidentally switching it on, which is what's happened in the past with me with portable keyboards. So I'm really pretty excited about this and I want to use it on the road.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Now, I know that I had reported in the past that when I had switched to 7.1 sound on my Media Center, that all of a sudden I was having these weird problems where every once in a while my audio on my shows would just crap out. And I would either get this like repeating loop of 2 seconds of audio and then it would stop and I'd get the video error, no audio available message, or I'd get complete silence and then the video would stop and I'd get that message. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. But I knew that every once in a while, if I rebooted the computer, that would solve the problem. Well, guess why that solved the problem? Because it's an HDMI issue.
Of course it is.
When I switched to 7.1 sound, I got rid of my Toslink cable, my fiber audio cable, and instead did audio over HDMI. That's something else that I changed at the same time. Never make two changes at once. It always makes troubleshooting harder. I'll never learn that lesson. And the other day, just randomly, I thought, oh, what the heck, and grabbed the HDMI cable out of the back of the computer, plugged it back in, boom, audio's back. So it looks like I'm going to be buying one of those $79 HDMI fixer gadget things that I can never remember the name of.
The Geffen HDMI Detective.
Yeah, that. I think I'm going to need that. Otherwise, I could go back. I mean, the other thing I'm going to do first is I'm going to go back to using the fiber audio cable and see if the problem goes away. I'm expecting it will. Crazy.
That's unfortunate.
All right. So you're right. I have been watching a lot of television. You've been gone for 3 weeks. What am I going to do?
Well, that's true.
So the first thing, which is kind of random, is that Our friends that have two young children and we spend a lot of our time with wanted to expose their kids to Star Wars, presumably in light of the new films coming out and figuring that they'd be interested in them because they're Disney. And so we watched the first Star Wars film that came out, which was Episode 4. And you may remember that I ranted about having to buy that and not being able to buy it through the same channels as I bought the other movies, because that movie wasn't available digitally the same places that the other movies were available digitally. But we did, in fact, watch it on Vudu, and that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed the experience of watching the digital copy of that and seeing that again. I have not watched that movie in a very, very long time. And then a lot of television. So let's go through the list. Mr. Robot, I Am Up to Speed. It is awesome. I am loving, loving, loving this show. So I don't know if you're... Have you started this?
No, but...
Yeah.
I just keep hearing great things about it. And it's on USA?
It is. Let me tell you, if you have access to a service or a streaming box that has the USA Now app, do not watch it there. I don't know if you saw my tweet about this or not.
No.
But the USA Now viewing experience is, and I am not joking, I am absolutely not joking, some television, and then 10 consecutive ads, and then some television, and then 10 consecutive ads.
Oh my gosh.
By the time the show was over, they had played one episode. I watched one episode on USA Now. I'll never do it again. They had played 55 ads.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I what are they thinking?
They're thinking cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah, unbelievable. Now, I've heard that online, if you go to the website, to the USA Television website, it's exactly the opposite. It's like no ads. So if you want to catch up on it, you should do that. Or just buy the episode somewhere. The other thing that I was trying to watch, and I've really lost steam, is The Astronauts' Wives Club. And after watching the most recent episode, I decided, you know, I really want to go back to watching something that better covered and honored the families that were a part of this. And do you remember the series on, I think it was the Discovery Channel, called When We Left Earth?
Yes. I never got to watch it, but it's a five or six part series.
If you're really into the space stuff like I am, you should watch this. It is amazing. It is so well told. And I mean, this is embarrassing, but I'm going to say it anyway, because it's just, it is so incredible to me. The episode where they landed on the moon, like, I was tearing while I was watching it. It was just so well done.
Well, I don't think you should be embarrassed by that. It was an, I almost said astronomical. that's deserved.
I'm still recovering from that. Okay. So I've been watching Big Brother, as I have, and I mentioned a while ago that I picked up Weeds again. Weeds is one of these premium TV, I think it's Showtime, half hour comedy, no laugh track shows. It's very quirky. It's Mary Louise Parker, I think that's her name. Very funny show. I've enjoyed it when I watched it in the past, and so I decided I'd pick that up again since I had finished watching episodes. I like to have something that's just a short 30-minute something if I want to watch something quick before going to bed. And that's all available on Netflix now. So I've finished through season 2 on that. I think there are 8 seasons of that, so I have a bit to go yet, but that's been a lot of fun. I finally watched the premiere episode of season 2 of True Detective. And I am so uninterested. It just doesn't look good at all.
But
did you watch the first season at all?
No, I've never watched True Detective. I seem to remember you having a relationship with season 1 where you weren't quite sure how much you actually liked it, but you kept watching anyway.
Yeah. No, this was bad enough that I have no interest in watching it. And hearing people talk about episodes coming up, it sounds like it gets to a point where it just does like a complete reset mid-season. I'm like, well, then why even bother? So I'm yeah, I'm not going to watch anymore. Now, this next thing, I don't know that everybody's going to be into this, but like many people, I tuned in to see the first episode of I Am Kate on E! And this is the story of Caitlyn Jenner, who formerly used to be Bruce Jenner. And, you know, this is getting a lot of attention for so many different reasons. One is that a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, this is just spectacle and this is all about just making the money. And obviously with stuff like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, it's easy to jump to that conclusion. However, you know, kind of regardless of what you think about everything that Bruce went through and his transition to Caitlyn, this is an intriguing show. I don't know that I'm going to watch it, but I have to say that I'm intrigued about the fact that she seems to be, if this is true, she seems to be doing this to raise awareness for people who aren't in the position that she's in, where she has the money to just say, screw everybody if you can't deal with this.
Right.
And a lot of people can't do this. And if she can help people through that, then that's great. There are going to be a lot of people that are, you know, just put up their hands and say, whatever. There are also going to be a lot of people, and I think I fall into this category of people who just don't quite get it. But I have to give some props. So,
sure.
Finally, and here's a long shot. You know how we talk about all those shows that I record and then never go back and watch?
Yeah, none of them could be that old, because I would imagine that after 3 or 4 years of not watching a show, you must just give up and delete them.
Right. I don't do that. So I started, it's a good thing that it's like slow season, right? Like even the summer series are starting to end. I started picking up Boston Legal again. Anyone remember that?
I do.
I'm watching season 3 from 2005.
Right. That's a decade ago. A decade.
Now, let me remind people, this is when HD was still problematic and transitional.
Oh, man.
So one of the things that's really interesting is that I'm watching this, and then you go to an ad break, and I really forgot how bad this was. You go to an ad break for an HD show on an affiliate network, and it would go back to standard definition.
Right.
And then you'd come out of the ad break, and the show would start, and it would still be in standard definition for a couple seconds. And then it would jump back to high definition, and you'd usually like miss a word or something in the switch. Oh, what a mess that was.
Yeah.
I'm glad we won't have to go through that again with 4K. So I have to say, I'm so glad that I did this. Boston Legal is a David E. Kelly property. I don't know if people recognize that name or not. He's responsible for most of the quirky law dramas that have been on television for the last couple of decades, including L.A. Law, Boston Legal, Harry's Law. There are a number of other ones. He also did Ally McBeal. He did Boston Public, a school drama in the Boston area. I guess he's from Boston. He has a writing and production style that, very much like Alan Sorkin, really engages me. And I have to say that after watching a couple episodes and getting sucked back into that and enjoying it so much, I went and deleted some shows that I don't think I'm ever going to watch again, because I just felt like, well, why am I still recording this? And as an example, Humans. I was recording Humans even though I had only watched the first 2 episodes and didn't really think it was all that good. And there was another series that I had watched 1 or 2 episodes, and I'm like, oh, screw it. I'll just get rid of the rest of them. I'm not going to watch it. Because this is really good television. And I forget the guy's name. He's in the show Blacklist that you watch now.
Right.
He's like the lead attorney in this. Yeah. And his co-stars are William Shatner and Candace Bergen, and a really good cast of people. I love the show. I am so glad that I got back to it because I just faltered in the middle of season three, and I've finished season three now and am going to be starting season four. And I love this. Absolutely love it. So that is, believe it or not, a summary of what I've been watching on TV. And in the meantime, let me just say, hey, finally, congratulations to Tatiana Maslany, the star of Orphan Black, who finally got an Emmy nomination.
Yeah. How did it take this long?
I don't know.
And, you know, she won't win it. But probably she not got the nomination.
Still so, so deserved.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm glad you've been watching so much TV because someone on the show had to, and it sure as heck wasn't me over the last 3 weeks. Shortly before leaving, I don't know if I had finished this on before the last episode I recorded, but I finished season one of Turn, that AMC show about Revolutionary War spies. Loved it. Basically going to wait for season two to show up on Netflix because I started season one on Netflix like right after season two finished on TV. So since I can't watch that without paying for it on a per episode basis, I'll just set up a series recording for it for season three whenever that comes around again, probably next spring. And then watch season two while that's being recorded. You know, that crazy hokey pokey you have to do when you find shows at odd times. So really loved Turn. Check it out if you think you'd be interested in that. And then we started watching season two of Newsroom. We bought the Blu-rays, ripped them all, took them with us to watch on the 13-hour flight to China. Thinking, hey, we could actually crank through the entire second season on this flight. But you kind of, despite the fact that it's a really good show, you can't just watch. At least we can't just watch episode after episode after episode for that kind of duration. So we watched a couple of episodes, and then you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks we'll finally get back into that as our lives get back to normal. Other than
that's pretty intense. You know, that's something that I think that if you binged on that, you'd just be exhausted.
That's that's true. And maybe that's why Jen wanted to stop where we stopped. But yeah.
Did you see that that's available on Amazon Prime now?
Are you serious?
Season two, not season three yet, unfortunately.
Oh, well, that so the season so that doesn't I just help bought. You. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah. All right. I mean, this is a show that I want to purchase so that I can lend it to people and things like that. So it's such a good
show.
You know,
it's funny. You were talking about the gyrations that you go through when you run into something mid-season. With Boston Legal, I had missed a couple episodes in the recordings. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll just go buy them. Show's 10 years old. You can't go buy the old episodes that are missing.
Really?
Really?
Huh.
They don't exist.
So you have to, like, find a DVD in a bargain bin somewhere.
Exactly. So I've already put the first DVD for season four in my queue at Netflix because I'm missing an episode that's on the first DVD.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, crazy.
Fun. All right. Well, the other thing that we like to do from time to time is to throw out a podcast pick. And this week it's my turn. And this week I'm going to go back to the gaming side. So I'm sure that this is a podcast that Richard is not listening to. It is called Podcast Unlocked. And it is IGN's podcast devoted to Xbox. So it's been around for quite a few years. It started as an Xbox 360 show. They just had their 200th episode, so obviously the show has some staying power. It's been around for a while. It's really good. They do an audio and a video version if you're into video podcast. It's not tremendously long. It's overall, it's a really good show devoted to Xbox stuff without being too fanboy type shows because they work for IGN. It's not like they work for an Xbox publication where they have to be, oh, Xbox is the greatest thing ever. Now they're they're video game journalists, not just Xbox people. So so overall, it's a really good show if you're into Xbox gaming stuff. So Podcast Unlocked, and again, we'll have a link to it in the show notes.
So unlike Startup, which is a show that you told me about and I started listening to, this is not one of your recommendations that I'm going to start listening to.
No, not for you, Richard.
All right. So that is going to be it for what we've been up to in our respective entertainment centers. One quick announcement before we wrap up on this episode, and that's that I'll be back on Pop Tech Radio this weekend talking more about HomeKit and about Windows 10. And a reminder to people that if you're running Media Center, don't take the upgrade. If you're interested in listening to that, I'll be on 12:30 Eastern time on affiliates that have that, or online if you don't mind listening to the thinly veiled propaganda ads from some right wing lobbying firm.
And where would you find that online?
You would find that at poptechradio.com.
All right, cool. All right, I have one more thing I want to say before we get out of here for the week, and that is one more huge, huge, huge thank you to everybody who helped make our dream of getting to China and adopting this wonderful child possible. We couldn't have done this without the help of all the people who helped us get there. So whether that meant that you were helping us financially or just sending us advice and well wishes and just support in all of the different ways that people did. Another huge thank you from both me and Jen and Eden, and while Gia can't really say it herself or doesn't really have any idea the level of involvement you all had, I'm sure she's grateful for it too. So it was an incredible journey getting to China, an incredible journey there. And it's awesome to be starting the rest of our lives together. And it was great having you all along the ride, helping us fulfill that dream. So thank you guys again. And, you know, if you missed out on any of that trip, I posted some sways, on some tweets. You can check out our blog, has lots of links and articles on it at greatwalltogreatlakes.com if you want to check that out. And again, thank you all so, so much. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. If you want to get a hold of us for the next episode, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google+. You can send us an email message at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also check out our other podcasts like The End User, which is a little bit on hiatus right now. But a show that isn't on hiatus is Richard's other show, and that's Home On. What's going on with Home On?
So on my latest episode, I had a colleague of mine from Universal Mind. That's my day job. We spoke about the state of UX, user experience in the smart home, and ways that might get better over time. His name is Joe Johnston, and really smart guy. Loved having him on. On our next episode, we'll be featuring Greg Stebbin. He's a radio technology correspondent, and we'll be talking a little bit about some use cases for very specific technologies like locks and sensors.
Very cool. All right, and if you like any of our podcasts, you can find all of them on iTunes and Zune and the Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio services. They're available at all of those places. And if you like them, we'd appreciate it. You could help us out by leaving us a rating or a review. Toss us some stars, as you like to say on Home On. And then come back and listen to the show live. But don't just listen to the show live. Participate. We've got a chat room, if you can find the time in your schedule to listen to us live, where you can interact with us while we're doing this. It's helpful to us. It's fun for us. Hopefully it's fun for you. We typically do the show Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes that changes, like this week. So your best way to find out when the show is definitely going to be on is to follow us on Twitter, but typically Tuesday nights at 8. But that's going to do it for episode 336. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 337. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.